scheduled meeting of the zoning planning committee of the Board of Aldermen. At the start of the meeting, we have Alderman Siskin from Ward 3, Alderman Yates from Ward 5, Alderman Kalis from Ward 8, Alderman Zandberg from Ward 6, and Vice Chair, myself, Marcia Johnson from Ward 2, and Chair. We also have Alderman Ted Epstein from Ward 3, Alderman Jay Harney from Ward 4, Alderman Susan Albright from Ward 2. Any other Alderman present? Okay. And from the Planning Department, we have Candace Havens, who's the Director of Planning and Development. Eve, are you here? There you are. Eve Tapper, Chief Planner for Current Planning. And Seth Zarin, Chief Zoning Code Official. We have Lisa Young, Associate City Solicitor. And Maura O'Keefe, Assistant City Solicitor. Joyce, would you like to introduce members of the Planning Board who are here with you this evening?
I am Joyce Moss, Chairman of the Planning Board, Planning and Development Board, and I'm seeing Leslie Berg.
Just you and Leslie?
And delivering things to our homes.
Oh, okay. Okay. I just want to make sure, where did you get the...
Yep, I just grabbed all of them.
Okay. All right. Candace, just to take up Doc up, we've been joined by President Lennon from Ward 1. And former Alderman Brooke Lipson. We're going to be taking up docket item 400-11. I'm not going to read it in its entirety. I think.
Thank you.
I think it's all quite patently clear what we're doing this evening. So, Candace, I want to thank you for getting the Planning Department memo out earlier than Friday for people. It is my anticipation that we are talking about content that any eyes that need to be dotted, T's that need to be crossed, commas and semicolons, colons, dangling participles, etc. have all been taken care of, and we're not going to have that sort of edit tonight. Those should be taken care of outside of this meeting, so we're really focusing on content and wording about content. Is that fair, committee? All right, Candace.
Over the last, actually 3 years, there has been a lot of work done to develop the plans for the site, and over the last 4 months, staff has taken a deep look at a lot of different aspects that have led us to the steps that we are going to be looking at tonight. And we've looked at other sites, we've looked at projects in Massachusetts as well as other parts of the country. We've evaluated our own existing zoning standards. We looked at the comprehensive plan, particularly the elements regarding economic development and the mixed-use element that was recently adopted. We looked at the demographics of businesses and how they function. We looked at the attributes of our village centers as well, talked to developers about their approaches. And so a lot of what you're seeing is really the culmination of a lot of that research and work. And the Zoning Planning Committee, as well as the Planning and Development Board, have been integral to the effort to really look at that and to improve the document as we see today. And I think what we have tonight to show to you is really a much more matured text as a hybrid, as we talked about earlier at our first meeting. We combined dimensional standards as well as some performance-based standards, which we'll talk about as we go. And this will really just be a brief summary of those things which we've really talked about in quite detail already. Direct access has been raised a number of times, and our Director of Transportation indicated that the Riverside site really wasn't eligible for direct access, and he jumped on to looking at Liberty Mutual as it had been suggested that maybe there were some similarities or differences. He did take a look at the Liberty Mutual site and found it to be similar to Riverside, in that Riverside as well as Liberty Mutual are sites where there's already existing interchanges. And the criteria relate to the creation of a new interchange for a project for which new money is available. Also, was a question that was raised with regards to access to the Riverside Center, which is to the east of the site. And this site was listed, well, actually, the special permit indicated that if, in fact, direct access was provided to the MBTA site, that there would be a connection made between the two. As we mentioned in the staff report, MBTA has not given its permission to make that connection, and therefore it is considered to be not feasible right now. It was not to going across DCR property to make such a connection, that would mean DCR as well as Conservation Commission approvals would be required. It is within a buffer zone in this area, and also would potentially require Here you see, this is a map of the site right here, and these hash marks, this is what we look at in our department, whether something is subject to conservation restrictions. These lines in here indicate that there has been some conservation review in the past, but this strip along here delineates the 200-foot, actually this is the 200-foot line along here, and then the 100-foot line along here. It cuts right through the middle of that. Traffic impacts, of course, were a concern to many, and the text and the plan, comprehensive plan, both encourage mixed use as a way of actually capturing some efficiencies with traffic generation in that it lowers traffic and parking as well. To have mixed uses on the site, the more things you provide on the site, the less travel there is to and from. It's also transit-oriented, and we hope it will be more so next to the MBTA station. The impact analysis and after studies that are shown in the text are really intended to really take a good look at what, after each phase, is going to happen with regards to traffic in the area, and then to monitor, and if projections are accepted, then to mitigate, then you can also get a bond to actually make this important. People weigh on both sides of this, too much, too little parking. And the way we're going to be able to figure that out is to do the shared parking analysis. And that's, as we've discussed, a way to consider the mix of uses and how much parking can be reduced as a result of having shared parking opportunities. We'll look at the availability of parking. We'll look at how it's priced. It was also raised in the public hearing. And look at how we can use incentives to get people to get out of their cars by adding good cars, by having bike sharing, by having a transportation demand management plan that people can really use. And all of these things that we've required in the text is that inform the special permit process. Project size and scale. We looked at how to balance the benefits and the impacts. And this is a recurring theme of, in terms of trying to really look at how we make the performance-based aspect of the text work properly. The overall development is limited by the dimensional standards of square footage, by use category, as well as the total square footage. You also look at the dimensional standards, setback, height, FAR. Those things all regulate what can happen in terms of the size and scale of the project. But the impact studies do that as well. So if the projects create impacts that exceed what projections are considered desirable, then they can be pulled back so that it's in a project that's acceptable in the community context. When we look at the size and design features, the Land Use Committee, through the special permit process, will be taking a broad view of that, but the Urban Design Commission also will take a look and provide its input into the site features. And we have suggested concept review as well as the special permit, so there will be a couple of opportunities to look more closely at that. Balancing the flexibility and predictability has been really the test to try to see if we can capture both of those things at the same time. Predictability is good for everybody, the developers, the residents, so people really know what to expect. So you know how it's going to look, how much density there will be, what kind of traffic to expect, how it can be managed. At the same time, a lot of people have suggested, and we certainly support, having some flexibility built into that to be able to allow for changing market conditions. We don't know what the demand for different uses will be in the future, and to be able to have some movement around those, to have some options for user space is appropriate. Allowing for design improvements during special permit also is possible if you have a little bit of flexibility built in. The proposed text you have suggests 10% flexibility around the categories A, B, and C, which are business, retail, and office. And that total would not exceed 580,000 square feet. And the breakdown you have in the staff report, which you can go over actually in a bit. There have been some changes to the use chart, and many of these came up as a result of comments that were made during the public hearing. We added some clarifying language with regards to uses that are similar or excessive to. We added different principles of the use that would be allowed. And this is major data. We haven't really talked about that much, but you know, it's a place where you could have an office where a tenant could come in and or set up their business to launch it and then move on to a larger site, a more permanent site in the future. So it's an opportunity for startup businesses. Medical offices would be allowed by special permit, and they were concerned less about the traffic generation for those types of uses. So put that into the special permit category. And prohibited manufacturing. It was never intended to go there, but to make it clear, that is considered a prohibited use in this text. And then we've also added bike rentals and electric car charging stations and other things that can incentivize people to get out of their cars and not drive along their destination. Private non-accessory parking was removed because we felt it was really counter to transit-oriented development to have a pet parking at the business. And then we did add some revisions for readability. Open space, vertical integration of uses, excellent in placemaking are things that our mixed-use element advocates for and are generally considered in the part in the special permit process, but in adding the flexibility that I mentioned earlier into the zoning text, there is a greater opportunity to be able to have some vertical integration of uses and to foster excellence in design. School impacts are going to be considered as part of net fiscal impact analysis. The overall net fiscal impact has to be a positive one, but there are limits on what can happen in terms of how our ability to regulate the number of children that are in the schools. We can't levy transactions or an impact fee on school impacts. We can't discriminate against families, nor can we regulate the internal configuration of apartments. So what we will do is when the fiscal impact analysis comes back, that we have to actually look at the solutions, tailor those solutions to the problem that's identified at the time. There were a number of comments about flooding at Lions Field, backups in other places as well. And we have a fairly long list of particulars that we would ask that the developers submit to show us that efforts have been made to address these kinds of issues. And I would actually like to make a note of clarification, which is on page 24 of your report, that we have identified a ratio of 8-1 for mitigation of inflow. And in a conversation with our city engineer today, he didn't really realize the requirement, which was his request, was something that he probably was asking for in a special permit. It wasn't his intent to put it into the zoning language itself, and was preferred to give some flexibility around that to simply say to the satisfaction of the city engineer and the director of water and sewer in the event that they'd like to have a higher ratio that he could do that, or go either way around that. But the upshot of it is that there would be more filtration removed than would be going into the system, so it would address existing conditions as well as the new inflow. Several people also mentioned the 48B option as an alternative. The proposal that has been referenced is a 550-unit for all residential projects. By building that project, it would bring our affordable housing percentage to somewhere around 9%, where 10% is the minimum goal standard that's set by the state. It would have slightly less traffic impacts on Grove Street, but there would be a trade-off in the school impacts, potentially, depending on the number of kids that would live there. This project is really the one that the comprehensive plan makes you feel for a site like this, because it has a positive net fiscal impact. The commercial rates are higher for taxes than for residential, and there would be probably lower impact on the schools. It's also a place where there is an opportunity for greater community benefits because there's a variety of different uses that the general public can go versus mostly isolated to residents of the site. So a few other text changes that I'll just call your attention to is we did make some added language under the section regarding development parcel and organization of owners, which basically allows for easements on adjacent property and does not require adjacent property owners to become members of the organization of owners if that in fact occurs. We've also identified the advisory council that's referenced in that same section, and we put in a piece that suggested that at the time of special permit, that the constitution of that advisory council be delineated so that people have an idea of how people will be appointed to that council, and that that council would fairly represent community interests. The lot area in parcel 5, as we mentioned earlier, has been changed to 9 acres, a minimum of 9 acres, and it's consistent throughout the document. That also prevents subdividing into smaller portions. There was some clarification around when after studies would begin, and they would begin within 12 months of actually full occupancy of each phase. I'd like to add that word full occupancy because it's been pointed out to me. To have occupancy granted when it's not full doesn't really give us the value of that evaluation. And then they would last 24 months after completion of the full development after full build out. The river access, so language was changed to reflect some concerns that Alderman Baker had, some Smithy, and also Planning and Development Board had some ideas about making sure that even though some of those properties that are near the river aren't within our jurisdiction, that we would make every effort to try to still make the best use of the site to appreciating the benefits of being by the river. The community use space, now we also include the definition of community gardens is also included in that. And there were some recommendations from the Planning and Development Board that were inserted with regards to the, well, I mentioned the open space language. Also, page 21, there is a reference to under excellence in placemaking, it references providing high-quality architectural design, and the word end site planning were also added to that. This excellence in placemaking goes really beyond, as pointed out by members of the board. It goes really beyond just the design building. It's really about the integration of the lease on the site to enhance visual and visual quality of the site as well as for residents and visitors to both mixed-use development and its surroundings, which is context of that comment. And finally, there was also a suggestion, a lot of discussion around the possibility of adding something to the text that makes mention of keeping our eyes on accessibility issues as the project develops, and there was some very specific language that the planning and zoning board had on that. That isn't in your text today, that was just something that I received after the report went out, just to call that to your attention. So our recommendation at this point is to recommend approval of 400-11 as amended. The bill, it does achieve the balance between the predictability and flexibility that we are striving for, and are particularly comforted by the fact that all of the information that will be requested prior to going to special permit will give the Land Use Committee the ability to call for the things that we like to see happen in this development and for those to be social. We have recommended no action necessary in 400-11 and 2 simply because of the fact that the access does not appear to be feasible at this time, and certainly it could be amended in future dates to that change, but a couple things would probably need to change. But either the criteria would need to change, the composition of the interchange would need to change, and there would need to be space left on the site for additional development to actually happen, because, you know, if we incentivize additional square footage on the site, there needs to be a place to put it. So, for that reason, we're suggesting NAM. Okay, that concludes my presentation.
I just want to acknowledge that Amy Sangello from Ward 4 has joined us, and Alderman Lyle Baker from Ward 7, and I believe Alderman Fishman from Ward 8. So, yes. Are we ready? Well, I think it would be helpful before we get into questions to ask Joyce Moss from the planning board, because most of us are just seeing your memo for the first time this evening. So if you'd like to go over on that. Okay?
I apologize to the Zoning and Planning Committee. We deliberated last Monday night the 2nd and Thursday night the 5th of April and concluded our deliberations at 11 o'clock, and Friday was Passover for me, so it was not possible to get this report to you until this morning, and sometimes these things don't work out, so most of you did not have a chance to see it. We agree with most of the recommendations that have been put forth by the planning department, but we differ in several respects, and I just want to go over those. Mainly, what we'd like to do is make several modifications to the amount of square footage and not the overall amount, the flexibility requirement, and a couple of other things, so that the land use planning procedure that follows this zoning procedure is strengthened and as much flexibility is given to that process as possible. The two areas, we agree with the overall 580,000 square foot limitation. We also agree for the most part with the 10% flexibility rule and think it's a pretty good number. However, in the 10% flexibility rule, you could take 10% of any of these uses, office, retail, residential, but when you transfer it to, and you're still within that 10% limitation, it means that no more than 2,000 square feet can be added to retail. We don't know what a good number of amount of retail is here. We don't know what the site can handle. We don't know what retailers, whether retailers would even be interested. No one is interested in seeing some mall and making this a huge retail destination. But in support of our idea that a 10,000, 50%, it's a 50% rule, that 50% over 20,000 or an additional 10,000 square feet could be added to retail. In support of that, I know several examples which you may be interested in. One of them is take a small size market and think the Wabin market, for instance, which could easily occupy between 5,000 and 8,000 square feet. In Massachusetts, the average size of a pharmacy, CVS, 9,000 square feet. Walgreens or Brooks are about 12,000 square feet. A 150-foot restaurant with its kitchen will occupy between 37,000 to 5,000 square feet. So that these uses alone will overwhelm your retail allotment. Now, we think that putting ancillary retail in another pot helps flexibility, and we agree and we're very happy to see that. But we still think as a zoning envelope that it would be better to allow as much as the 50% greater amount to retail if it were to be transferred from office or and or from residential. So again, overall square footage would never go up. In terms of likelihood, and this is why, and it just points to the fact that we think these things would be better decided at land use, in terms of likelihood from a developer's point of view, chances are that the greatest flexibility is really needed at office because you have these large users. We are recovering from a recession. My look at some of the market reports for the last 2 years indicates a greater amount of these large users around. Where do they look? They look at spaces between about 175,000 to 250,000 square feet. That's where they're clustered. That doesn't mean everyone's looking for that amount of office space. There are people looking for it. There are large users, 100,000. There's one that I saw at 1 million. But the cluster is in that area of 175 to 250. So this kind of flexibility really aids the development of the office space. That would come from somewhere, and most likely it would come from residential. It may even come from retail. So whether these outcomes outcomes will come about is not anything that any of us can predict. Things can go really very differently. But our goal was to provide optimal flexibility a little later in the process and really ask for an envelope at this point. We were very happy to see the modification of the requirement that all office use be contained within one building. That's been changed to the majority. And again, this allows flexibility. It encourages vertical integration. It doesn't legislate vertical integration. And it is another example of the fact that efforts have been made to make this process, make the land use planning process as flexible and dynamic as possible. In the same vein, we examined the topic of open space. And open space, I think, is one of the most sensitive. Everyone wants as much as possible. We certainly heard from people who wanted to go up to 20,000 square feet of beneficial open space. Our board members would like to see more open space. But we thought about this as a possible trade-off, and could flexibility be built even into the requirement for 15,000 square feet of beneficial open space? We felt if there was a demonstrable community benefit to be gained, that we would like to see it left to the Land Use Committee to work that out. And the language is our recommendation could take one of several forms, but this is what we would need. The percentage of beneficial open space would be specified within a range, or left as is, but with the proviso that a deviation from the current minimum of 15% is allowable if and only if the Land Use Committee, by a supermajority, is persuaded that the new site plan merits such deviation and the trade-off provides a demonstrable benefit to the community. There is really very... There's not anywhere to go if we are sort of land use stays rigid. So that is one of our chief concerns, and the 10% rule and alleviating that for retail. Otherwise, Candace mentioned we had a discussion about accessible design. She took care of that. We have some language proposed. We are concerned about the word publicly accessible. Again, these are fairly small wordsmithing things, and we would ask that at all of these impact studies that the community itself is part of the scoping process.
My brief
one. That one. Didn't get
sorry.
The toes.
No, no, sorry about that.
That the community itself is part of the scoping process and is included. And we recognize that it's the department that will pick the firm. But again, if it's up in the air and the department can't decide, that we hope they will also then look to the community. But we do understand that they would want to make the final choice. But we do think it's very important to take advantage of local knowledge and take advantage of the community and allow them into the scoping process. That has been done already. We just would ask, there's a lot of impact studies yet to come over the next number of years, that they continue to be involved, because if they're involved, they will have more confidence in the outcomes of those studies and the information therein, the conclusions therein. And that is our report. Thank you.
Thank you, Jess. Okay. I had seen Alderman Yates and Alderman Baker. Questions?
Yes, about the open space. Had you had a chance to see if there was any previous plans for the use of the riverfront land there in the Charles River Pathway plan prepared by Mr. Deason Tanner for Community Conservators?
I haven't seen that. We did have Europe go back to take a look at previous open space plans. We went back to the 90s, and we were unable to find anything that created a clear and direct initiative or link from this site to the river. No plans that were outlined in the context of the open space and recreation.
You didn't have a chance to review the Eastern Canada plan, Charles River Pathway plan?
He may have looked at that. Now I'll have to check and see if he did as well.
Okay. Were you able to find anything? I don't remember the details of this one, but I do remember, maybe Amy whispered in my ears, the so-called Gilligan's Island development. A developer named Gilligan was trying to put something between the MBTA land and the river. I seem to remember it. This was maybe in the 70s or 80s, but that seems to contradict the state of affairs given there. Secondly, I'm questioning, and this is on page 17, and this is a policy issue, not a, that the 10% flexibility is not stated in referring to category C. And I was sort of wondering about that because I thought that, in fact, in a dense residential building, it would make a lot of sense to have accessory uses that the residents of the building could, in fact, use without having to schlep over to the commercial building.
No, sir, flexibility applies to all three categories. It's in the introductory paragraph.
Okay, but it's also stipulated in subcategory A shall not exceed 20,000 square feet, excluding offices, incidental to blah, blah, blah. And it's also given in category D. It seems like it should be in category C as well. Its omission seems confusing. On page 16, I'm confused as well with the heading. This is the chart. Up near the top, under accessory parking, then you have mixed-use developments if gross floor exceeds 20,000 square feet. I don't remember that being in the previous chart, but it's...
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you consult Fred Russell on the 8-to-1 ratio of the inflow infiltration? It's my understanding that as utilities director, he did convey that information directly to the developers in the past.
I actually talked to John Dagley and Lou DeVerna about that, and I don't know if they consulted with him or not. But, you know, I think that that is likely to be the standard that they will request, but they did just want to have the flexibility.
Well, what's wrong with at least? If they can do it better.
Go either way.
Well, why would it want to go to less offset?
I don't think Alder needs to, Candace is the person to ask that question of, and there's nobody here. So if that's a showstopper for you, you need to let us know because we need to get engineering to answer the question.
No, I'd rather have utilities answer.
Well, whomever the correct person is. So.
Sure.
But we're not going to solve it here.
Above that, on page 24, you have under the sanitary sewer thing, we have the 8-to-1, and in the stuff about stormwater, it doesn't appear to say that the site as rebuilt will not add additional stormwater to our system, to the major drain that I understand goes under the site, or to the overall stormwater drainage system of the city. So there's a lot of stuff that they're supposed to say analyzing it, but I don't see anything here that says that it can't make things worse.
It's really inherent in the notion that there would be many times more removal of infiltration, of inflow, than
I think that's for only for the sanitary.
Yeah, that's stormwater.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Exactly. I'm at the top of page 24.
The letter code there?
It begins on the previous page under Section A, study of the proposed project's surface water runoff, Living Kroger and Associate Deep Park System, which explores all feasible methods of reducing impervious services, including underground parking or compact outlets, with the possibility of roof water harvesting, including, and then it lists several things, but it never says what the standard is that they're to be measured against, i.e., don't make things worse.
Mm-hmm.
and preferably make things better.
That is certainly the goal.
Well, but it's not stated explicitly.
Well, in 20, page 21, there's a finding that water sewer is somewhat. A special permit condition. We have an introductory paragraph. It's housing, public transportation, parking equipment, and utility infrastructure enhancement are findings that need to be made. And the proposed mixed-use development would offer long-term public benefits to the city and therefore...
Is that page 21?
No, it's page 21, too.
The top.
Okay.
So it's number two, parentheses, on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And it lists that all these changes shall provide long-term public benefits to the city and nearby areas, such as, and F, the water, sewer, and stormwater infrastructure enhancement.
It should be the case for the board to filing submission, not the conditions you have to meet.
So, yeah, this should be going to page 20.
Is
the
there
heading of the category is for adequacy of public facilities.
Would there be any problem with cross referencing?
Want to keep it simple, so.
Well, you want to get it clear, so it's very.
Then I would rather emphasize on F at the beginning, because it's right at the beginning, to whatever kind of, I mean, enhancement can be much of anything. This is to not cause harm, whatever. I would just be, rather than adding extra words, embedded in text. So, again, our zoning ordinance tend to be overcomplicated at
with
best.
With cross-referencing.
Exactly. So, okay. Alderman, I'm keeping it on the table, right? I'm
it's
keeping it.
Okay.
Can I just?
Yeah.
I want to keep, just hold that thought. I can't. Everybody, okay?
Okay, that's it for now.
Okay, Alderman Baker.
I have a procedural question and then some questions on the draft. There will be some issues that we've heard from the planning board tonight, some of which have been incorporated, I think, by the department's presentation, but some may not. Are we in a position where we're hoping to have the draft be ready to vote tonight? Or
that
are we
was my hope. I did not anticipate a lengthy memo, and I just saw the planning department.
I understand.
So if we're not able to, we're not able to.
Okay.
I'm not going to...
The reason I'm, it may be that there are just enough little things that need to be done to get clean, and I know you'd like to send out a clean document rather than something that's done on the floor of the board.
No, we're not going
to. Okay. No, I understand. But in that spirit, I guess I have a couple of questions that would be helpful to understand. There's a reference to easement, the pertinent easements, and Kenneth, I was down in finance, so I didn't hear the first part of that. I just need to understand what that is, because I'm not sure that's the way you may want to phrase it. We can talk about what the policy is, but...
can you tell us where you are on the text?
This is page 17. There's some. I'm looking at the underlined new text, where there's a reference to owners of appurtenant easements. It would be useful just to understand the concept behind that, because normally speaking... for instance, if you have a right-of-way over a neighbor's backyard, you have an easement that is pertinent to your property, and that is what's called the servient estate or the burdened estate. It wasn't clear to me whether those terms were being used in the correct way. And we'd have...
I think they are being used correctly. What it's referring to is that, and I think people do not appreciate this point, that the driveway is going over... the adjoining lots, which at this point is not anticipated to be part of the development parcel. So it is going to have an easement over the pertinent, an easement over the Indigo lot in order to connect into the roadway. And that's why it's being used in the way you're talking about it. And actually, I think it does legally, when we look at it again, but it's deliberately intended to
exclude
Indigo. In real estate, we believe.
Well, the reason I was puzzled by it is because if you have the right, the road is going over the Indigo, right, the main parcel is the one to which the easement is appurtenant, not the adjacent parcels. So I think you may want to revisit that language just to double-check that again. All right? Because I'd understood it as you explained it, but I didn't think the language may have matched that. The second question just relates to, really, I think the department deserves a lot of credit here for having done a lot of heavy lifting in a short period of time to get language in front of us. The challenge of the process, obviously, is to try and make sure, as Alderman Yates alluded a little bit earlier, to make sure that all the parts mesh and work together. One thing that I think may need some refinement, and I'm not sure exactly how to recommend it be done, but where you have the additional filing requirements, where we have the conceptual, I'm sorry, page 22, on page subsection J, I guess it is, this is the whole process of the conceptual review, mm-hmm. right? Yep. Mm-hmm. And what has happened as we've gone along, for example, in the prayer page, page 21 on 5, there's new language relating to the open space, which I agree with. I think it's an enhancement in the language. The question, and you also referenced, Ms. Havens, that site planning is part of excellence in placemaking. The only thing I'm concerned about is that where you have the preliminary site plan provided, you would like to have the site plan reference those things that are ultimately going to be part of the criteria that are site plan related, so that you can get a preview that really does match what is ultimately going to be a criterion for approval. I'm not sure they quite match up yet, because this we've spent time really on the substantive criteria, but we really haven't gone back to look at the filing requirements in light of those changes. So, for example, just as a simple one, you may say in subsection J1C, where it says, landscaping, open spaces, trees to be removed, any access proposed, and part of the thrust about this was possible access. So you may say access proposed or possible access. But the point is not so much that specific term. It's just that there will benefit, it seems to me it will benefit everybody to have somebody sort of sit down and look at the filing requirements for the conceptual review against what ultimately come out as the standards, including things like Alderman Yates talked about in terms of stormwater, so that everything lines up together. Okay? And then finally, just on the Planning Development Board concept, there was a reference to a supermajority determination. I don't know how we're going to finally come out on that, but my sense is that anytime you're talking about something like this, we're really talking about the board rather than the committee. So that's just a technical part. Thank you.
Yeah. Great. Alderman Swiston?
Sure. I'm good.
Okay. Alderman Fishman?
I was just going to respond to Brian before he made his comment about the stormwater.
Yes.
And I think the standard actually is little I, which is the drainage analysis based on 100-year storm event, for 6 inches over 24 hours showing a runoff from impervious services will be infiltrated on site, which means it doesn't pass beyond the site. So that, to my understanding, is that typical standard, as opposed to using words will not make it worse or greater or whatever. But that was just my question.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, sir. Any other questions, concerns? Yes, Jane. I'll quote your name down. Read my writing.
Just a couple of small things. First of all, I'd like to comment also, adding to whoever it was who said that they wanted to thank the planning department for the great job that they've done and how you were really able to do a lot, make a lot of, I think, important changes and do a lot of important work over the holiday time and get this to us. Two simple things that I had a question on. The raising to 50%, which Joyce brought up, I think is a very good idea because that addresses an issue that I brought up the other day, which is if you just do the simple math and you've got, if you reduce the largest category, which is the 335,000, by 10%, 22.5 can go into the 225 category, and you have 11 left. And you can only put, even if you raise it by 50%, you can only put 10 into the second category. So there's no real way that you can reduce the largest category by 10%, and upping the smallest category to 50, I think, makes a lot of sense. Not that it's going to be done, but it does give the flexibility to do it, and the numbers do work out a little bit better. Yeah, the only other thing I wanted to ask about, and whether anybody else had comment on, is the not to exceed 290 units. One of our major concerns here is the number of units and the impact that the housing would have on the schools. So if there were some smaller units, if they had the flexibility, and if they found out that the market forces were pointing to young professionals and people who didn't want four-bedroom, three- and four-bedroom units, then we might have to, the market might dictate that they, in fact, do go over 290 units, yet stay within the same number of square feet. I would be okay with that, and I'd like to hear anybody's comment on why that wouldn't be a good idea, to get the flexibility.
So just make sure that if you stayed within the same footprint, so you wouldn't increase the size, but you could increase the size if you took it from somewhere
else. You could do 296 units, mm-hmm. But it makes a number of the units a little bit smaller.
Okay, well, Ms. Houston?
This is more of a question. I know we typically cite by number of units. Can we cite a number of bedrooms and we don't care how they split them up?
No.
Okay, just thought I'd ask.
You can't determine the configuration. But well, I'm not saying that we cite that you can go to X number or that how the units would be made up, but just that we give the flexibility so that if the market changes and smaller units would sell better or for whatever reason or we thought that would have a less harsh impact on the schools. Jay, did you have a comment with you?
Yeah, I'm very much opposed to changing that number. This has been discussed with the community. The doctors made their presentation. This was a number that we derived at, and you know, many people think it's still too high, but this is the number that we, you know, that we felt was the maximum.
And I understand that negotiation and how important that negotiation was. It was just that in my head, it seemed to me that if you stay within the same footprint, the same number of square feet, not increasing the number of square feet, that the more small units you have, probably the fewer children you're going to have in that.
But the more people increase driving.
Right.
Or taking the tea.
Remains to be seen.
We don't need to take this any farther. I just want to throw it on the table and see if I got any ideas on it. I'll keep quiet on that.
Run it up the flagpole, see who salutes.
That's right, yeah.
I've got a trait saying for everything.
Throw it against the wall and see if we'll
see it.
Okay, we've been joined by Alderman Gentile from the
Ocean. Put a fork in the
question. Yeah, I'll try.
Where are you going, Alderman Gentile?
Down there.
Oh, okay. It would have been easier to go that way.
No, I think you didn't see the front row.
Put a lot of violin in. He features life.
Yeah, Alderman Kaler.
So, I have a question on the after studies. They're required to be evaluated at full occupancy. That's what they have done. So, is it safer to say 95%? I mean, what defines full occupancy? Does that restrict actually when those studies are done, or if those studies can be initiated?
It would. You know, if it's half full, we wouldn't probably initiate it because there would be as much value in doing an assessment from 95 to 100% of the money. That's fine, and there's a minor tweak in the program now, but you know, the idea was to try to have it as fully occupied as possible so that study actually was meaningful.
I absolutely agree with that. I just want to make sure that we're not hamstrung by full occupancy and can't even execute on the application. So. And then with regard to Joyce's comments, or to the planning board's comments, I you know, I feel like they're very insightful, and the open space as well as the flexibility that they mentioned in the 50%, I have to echo what Alderman Danberg said. I mean, I think that more discussion on what we just heard would be a good thing. So at least that, if we, you know, in a committee, but also I want to hear from land use to understand if that amount of flexibility makes a difference significantly as you look at a project. But to me, the open space amendment that was proposed is, you know, open space to me and to the community from what we heard is important. And so that's something I think we should put on the table to consider as well.
Okay. Yes, Alderman Harmon.
With regards to the 50% figure that was thrown out, well, I appreciate the effort and the explanation from Joyce. I think that she really made the case of the three types of, at least two types of situations that would make the project worse. If you've ever been to a Swanton Market or a good grocery store, if you've ever been to a CVS or Walgreens, especially the super ones, and 9,000 square feet is a supersized CVS, they're very, very busy places, and it's going to cause a lot more traffic, a lot more, you know, I just think that you know, I'm opposed to that. I think that, you know, the 10% was a reasonable number, so I hope not raising it to 50%. These are just the type of things, taking it away from office or residential and putting it in something like that is going to create more traffic, a lot more traffic.
Any other? Did you want, you know, okay, well, your response from the land use representative?
Well, I've got four representatives here. I wouldn't
But, all right.
Dream of speaking for them.
All right. Would you like to speak for yourself? No? Okay. Anyone else from land use? Because you've got Alderman Fishman and Albright.
I'll venture a statement.
Okay.
I like the idea. I understand Alderman Hines' issue with potential additional traffic. But, you know, I like the idea of the more flexibility for the retail, especially, given the small number on the retail. A little bit doesn't go very far, but a little bit more still doesn't go very far, but it's better. So we're talking about 15 instead of 10.
Alderman Fishman?
So, just reacting, being on the land use committee. I'm not sure where the open space goes, but I think if there's legitimate open spaces, you know, under some discretion by the land use committee, moving that around, that could be helpful. But I think on the 50% question, I don't know whether 50% is the right percentage. I don't know if 10,000 square feet, you know, maybe 7,500 or 5,000 or something. But I think, you know, Alderman Harney is concerned about the traffic switch, and I think there is, you know, merit to that discussion. Because if you have, you know, more retail and you have less office, you know, there certainly could be less residential, there could be some switch. But I think one of the things that we can do in land use is actually ask for some traffic numbers, and, you know, I think we all in Testament would also agree we could ask for a peer review of that kind of change as part of that increase in percentage. So, you know, it wouldn't necessarily mean that it would be a good outcome if you had 50%, but at least it would be an outcome that we could examine and could be adjusted if the traffic did seem to be a problem. But I actually think the flexibility of the retail in particular is quite good, because what you don't know with 20,000 square feet is how the spaces will actually match up. You don't know whether you're going to have small users, a bunch of them, or you're going to have a large user. And I would suggest that we should not be afraid of a large user versus a lot of small users, because some of the intensity of the small users could be much more than their square footage would justify. So, you know, all this is speculation, but I think there's some flexibility that could be a key ingredient to help this project.
Oh, Alderman Gento?
I apologize for being late, but if I needed to get some things done at finance, I believe I understand where you're at right now as far as discussing, you know, the 10% or something greater. On the issue of retail, let me just make three quick points. A couple of meetings ago, I provided one page of trip generation information that was compiled by the traffic engineer for the developer, and it was revised looking at the most recent, shall we say, scaled-down plan. And if I remember correctly, the thing that jumped out at me was that 20,000 square feet of retail space was going to generate more traffic trips than 290 units. So if you're starting to think about increasing the retail, please keep that in mind, because you know how much traffic is of concern to the neighborhoods. Secondly, the RSNC spent a tremendous amount of time developing a survey, and I believe they passed on the results of that survey. They kept it open for 3 or 4 weeks. They compiled all the information, and I'm not an expert on what the results were, but I don't remember there being very much interest in, you know, a lot of CDS or a market or anything like that. To the contrary, they were looking for smaller type of uses. And then the third point that I would raise is, once again, the developer has done their own feasibility studies. One thing that they have not asked for throughout this entire process is to add any additional retail space. They are very, very comfortable that 20,000 is more than enough, and their studies are telling them that they don't need, a foot more. So please keep those things in mind. Do you have that traffic?
No, I was looking to see. I know what you're talking about, but I don't have it in hand here.
You're handing it out.
I do recall, but I don't.
Right.
Somebody else have? Yes, Drew.
Can I just respond on the trip generation? There's no question that retail would generate more traffic than residential use. And residential use also would promote much less than an office use. But you also have to think about the nature of the traffic. Office, the problem with office is that it happens twice a day. I mean, it's a backup. It's backup from Grove Street if they're going to be backup. We hope people will take transit in this kind of development. But you have an a.m. and a p.m. peak hour. In retail, it's more or less all during the day. And so the backups and the congestion is likely to not be as pronounced as an increase in another kind of use. And again, it doesn't mean you'll have 30,000 square feet. I even doubt it. It is purely for flexibility. Because we really cannot know at this point exactly how the market is going to play out for these different uses. The cycles change at alarming rates, so
Alderman Hetzman.
Just to follow up on those questions about the retail, I think one of the, and again, I'm glad it sounds like there's a consensus that we don't want this to be a retail mecca. This is not Chestnut Hill Square. This is not shopping center at the mall or what have you.
That's in Ward 7.
Yeah.
Never mind.
But what we had in mind, or what at least I had in mind, in a successful and vibrant mixed-use project would be one where there would be sufficient retail to serve the people who are coming to the site anyway, who are on the site anyway. And one of the ways to get at that issue, to make sure there was enough, was to exempt any retail that was only accessible, say, to the apartments in the residential, or only accessible to the offices. And you see that very commonly in office buildings from a single corporate tenant. They want a captive health club, or a daycare, or a cafeteria, restaurant, what have you. But the idea being that they're already there, they're not going to get in their car to go someplace else if they can pop downstairs to go to the health club, cafeteria, daycare. So I think we built in some flexibility there.
Yes, it does.
And so I'm hesitant to get into trying to guess what the right number is, whether it's 10%, 25%, or 50%, because again, my feeling was that the mixed-use project is also transit-oriented. We want to discourage people from getting in their cars and going someplace else. That, to me, is the function of the retail. If there's a market so that the folks in the residential don't have to go, you know, wherever it is, the nearest grocery store is, when all they need is, you know, a few staples, all the better. But I hesitate to create retail here that's going to draw folks in as a manager. The other thing is, in talking to the developer, the last thing I think we want to see are empty storefronts here or any place else. Or in Newtonville or Wells Avenue or what have you. They seem to have a number that they have in mind. I don't know what the right number is, whether 10%, 25%, or 50% is right. But I hesitate to expand it too much because, again, I think it may go beyond what we're trying to do, which is as an amenity to people that are already going to be on that site, commuters, residents, and employees.
I would agree with that sentiment generally. I guess the question I would have for the department is there, do you have a sense that the proposal that you presented will enable that to happen? I mean, one version of mass transit is an elevator, and you want people to go downstairs to the store and not, out into the street. So the question is there any additional flexibility you would recommend as a result of hearing from the Planning and Development Board?
Well, I think if you were going to do any flexibility, I would only tweak the one category of retail, because I mean, you already have substantial flexibility.
No, I understand, but would you...
And I think it really, it depends on how you use all of these spaces, because the fact is that you can't, at least in the draft, have these accessory uses, ancillary uses within the office building and the residential building that are intended primarily to serve those people who live and work in the building, and provides, as Ted said, other opportunities for things to be provided on the site, which would then cause them not to have to go elsewhere. Okay? So it sort of supplements the 20,000 that's being offered. So you do have a bit of an expansion in a sense there, but it's not, though people, the way that this is crafted now, doesn't preclude the public from going there, but it's highly likely that those kinds of uses that are integrated into the office and the residential are going to be used primarily by the people who live and work there. So
the answer is no?
I think it really depends on how these spaces are used. I
understand. Yes. I'm just trying to understand, do you recommend any change in the ordinance draft? That's all I'm trying to understand.
A little more definitive. Just to piggyback on top of what you're saying, Alderman Baker, is 10% seems low, 50% seems extraordinarily high. If there's, and I don't want to sound like we're going to put this up for, an auction here, but then they're done.
Let's review the bidding.
Exactly. But, I think, is there, and I don't know the end result. If you were to make this, just right now for the conversation, 25%, does that really gain you anything?
It gets you 5,000 square.
Right, but that, again.
In terms of comparison, that would be equivalent to, say, the stretch in Wauvin Center that is on Deacon Street. Mm-hmm. Not that which is on the other side of the mm-hmm. post office, but that cluster of buildings that go from Casina down to the market. That's about the square footage.
Yes, that's a lot.
Actually, about 28,000, 29,000. So
it was between those numbers.
That's
the total.
That's the total.
Right. Oh, okay. So, but would you recommend any modification? That's. But I'm just trying to understand what...
I like the flexibility, and I think if I'm comfortable with the numbers that are out there, I could be comfortable with slightly more as well.
So I think what she's saying, Alderman Baker, is a little bit more might be helpful. That's my interpretation of what she's saying.
Well, I guess I would like to... Then my sense is that a little more might be helpful without doing injury to the issues that Alderman Gentile has been concerned about. And the question is, what is a little bit more that might be helpful? And that's...
Did you have your hand up?
Yeah, this is more of a procedural question, and I'm not sure.
Can I have one conversation?
I'm not sure if you had, because I think Alderman Baker kind of brought it up. So, is your intention? Are we going to go piece by piece over on whether we accept? No, it's either we accept this or not.
Right. And so the biggest pieces are what we went, I mean, we've gone over, and if we've got to go through this ordinance, you'll find yourself,
So are we going to first take a vote on whether we want these changes included?
Now, the question right now that we're talking about is the flexibility. So the question before us is, should it be increased beyond the 10% that's already written in the document that the planning department?
Okay.
If there is a sense that it should be, there is the question of by how much.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where, you know, what that actually means in to Alderman Gentile's point of what's the impact down
we
the
road. We haven't heard anything about the vendor one anymore. This is just the planning board making the suggestion.
Okay. Correct. Alderman Eames.
On the point of flexibility, I think for the reasons outlined by the chairman of land use, that for this to be truly transit-oriented and mixed use, that the flexibility within the square footage of the proposed uses and the proposed buildings is fine. Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful if everybody who lives there goes down to the first or second floor to do as much as they possibly can, and even goes over to, the workers go over to the lobby of the residential building and vice versa. But beyond that, I think it's contradictory to the whole point of what we're proposing here. While I have the floor, could I throw in two quick things? On page 24 at the top, it says a conceptual drainage plan demonstrating the consistency of the infrastructure plan with the DEP storm management policy. You betcha. And the City of Newton drainage policy. What are those documents? I'm not aware of them.
Those document titles came from engineer.
Well, are they specific documents that can be referenced? I don't know what they are.
Yeah, they are.
They are?
Yeah, and I'm sorry. I'm aware of this because they're on the city's website and used to be before it got, you know, new and improved and all that.
New and improved and lost.
I honestly wasn't able to find these particular documents when I went to look for them today.
Well, are these the specific
there are actual documents. They're black and white documents that, I mean, you have to have a stormwater management policy. That's law. They have one. The City of Newton drainage policy, I think, is in writing. Seth might know more than I do about that.
Can we get them back on the website?
Well, that's a different question. We're not dealing with that tonight, Alderman's listening.
Sorry.
Yes, talk to President Lennon and then.
Do you want feedback on the new website?
Yeah.
Yeah, Seth, do you have a comment on this document?
Yeah, sure. I don't have a comment on the document. I'm not intimately familiar with myself. We were responding to engineering's suggested language.
Okay. Did you have anything else, Alderman Yates?
No.
Alderman Lennon?
I just wanted to ask Brian, you're referencing 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 there? Top page 24?
Top page 24, just number 1.
Just I.
Stormwater
just
management
I.
policy in the city.
Don't you document the record?
It's in the people's city.
I meant those two. I don't know if something's consistent with them or not, because I don't know what the policy, what either of those policies is. And frankly, if
anybody look them up, see if they're on the website?
I'm looking right now.
Okay, thank you.
And are those the legal titles of them?
Well, if it came from engineering, I would hope
so. That's like asking the law department for an engineering opinion.
Yes, Alderman Baker.
Just to, while we sort that out, can we get to some resolution about the percentages and the question
yes,
of commercial?
We will. Because, Alderman Yates, I mean, I guess I would say to you that we've had this for a few days. It would have been helpful to have those sorts of questions when we could have had answers before we are.
I assumed that such elementary references would have been included, and it's my fault for not checking.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. So back, did someone else want to talk about stormwater? Can we come back to the
standard policy?
The standard policy. Okay.
On page 21, we talked about public benefits, and you talked about S before water, sewer, and stormwater infrastructure enhancement. Mm-hmm. And I thought I heard Chris say something to the effect that it does not cause costs.
Yeah, I mean, we've strengthened that.
Well, yeah, okay. We need to strengthen that.
Yes, right.
Because it not only cannot...
Right, it doesn't say anything.
Cannot cause harm. Okay. It needs to improve the situation.
Right, so right now it doesn't really say what enhancement can be pretty wimpy.
Right,
okay. Yes. I'd like to come back to the flexibility. So one last thought. All right, around the table. President wanted a flexibility question.
I'm fine with the 10%.
You're fine with the 10%. On the standard.
I can go either way.
Okay.
Really? The other way.
Personally, I would like to see a little more opportunity for the commercial use so that the project really does meet the objectives of being a successful mixed-use operation and keep its... I mean, we're trying to avoid having the impacts go outside, but I would like not to end up having send people outside. That's the flip side. So you don't want to draw people in there, but you don't want to send the people who are there out to other places and increase traffic. So I would be comfortable with an increment of the along these lines, not up to the 50% as you've indicated, but if there were some, the planning department felt like, for example, for this limited purpose, 20% would be appropriate, I would be prepared to support that. I'd just like to have some guidance from the department whether they concur. I don't want to make that judgment out of the air.
Right, so whether 20%, would you?
I think that would be fine. As we said, you know, given the example of Marvin as something that we all know in terms of scale, you can picture it within that context. It allow for, at least using that example, if there's a variety of uses, it offers you, a small market, a hardware store, a restaurant, farm, for this big America, without actually expanding it to the point where you're going to be drawing a lot from.
And if you do have some people come there, my sense is that they're likely to be on the T, and that there is a sudden public benefit in having something at the end of the T line that you can get through these days, even if it doesn't run very often. That's a whole other story.
Well, I think the thing is, too, that these are also going to be monitored by the impacts. So, at the end of the day, when we see what that looks like in terms of the uses that would be proposed there, then we'll find out whether or not
you've got a control. Okay.
Okay. Alderman Swiston.
I'm good with the 10%. To Alderman Baker's point, unless I'm misunderstanding, I mean, based on what Alderman Hasmahan was saying, though, that if there's resources that's limited to on-site use, though, that doesn't even count in the swapping, right? So we're not limiting the ability to address the needs of those already on-site. What we're talking about the swapping is the pure retail that would be accessible to everybody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see the need to increase the 10% at all.
Okay. Well, Angela, I know you can't vote, but you certainly have an opinion.
I actually don't know that I can't vote yet.
Okay.
I'm still in the process of discussing that with the
attorney. But you still have an opinion.
But it's not a final opinion. We're still in discussion. So
opinion on this.
Oh, I see. I'm comfortable with the 10%.
Okay.
Ditto.
I think we might end up at 10%, but I like the flexibility of going up to a 20%, whatever that recommended would be. I think 50% would be too much, but I do like that flexibility, and like in some way, you could reduce traffic.
But you're okay, you would support the 10% if this committee decided the 10% was, that's not a showstopper for you, Mr. Kayla, am I correct?
Correct.
Can I make one other comment? I really want to iterate. I don't view this as an attempt to try and add traffic to the situation. I view it as a way of trying to make the mix work within the overall traffic limits that I've understood were part of what we were intending to do all along. So I don't view this as hostile to the community and the neighborhood by making that shift. I think it's my sense is it may enhance the opportunity for the development to be successful from the community's point of view as well as the developer's point of view. Now, if I'm wrong in that, I'm happy to be corrected, but I just think the 10% started with, it was a relatively small number, and I think 20 gives you a little more flexibility. You may never get there. That's why.
For myself, personally, I commend the community and the board for aldermen, because when we started this process 110 years ago, actually, I think we started before my granddaughter was born. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't see that this day would come where we, to be honest with you, that there would be some flexibility. So I commend all three of you and the community at large with whom you're working. I would like to see a greater amount. However, in order to do so, I would not feel comfortable raising it here, as I said, like an option, because we don't know the impact. So without any further study, though, Candace, I trust you implicitly. I think you and your department have done a marvelous job. I think if we were to increase it, it would have to be after further study. So it really is, and right now, the way I wrote this down, it's basically even Steven, and I don't hear anybody who would think about or like to see an increase saying that that's a showstopper for them, because I just don't think it's fair to the community just to pull a number out of the hat. And say, we're going to do this without really fully analyzing it. So it's really up to this committee, people sitting around this table, not to anybody sitting in the audience, whether we feel that's important enough for the city of Newton, and I'm saying the city of Newton, not just the neighborhood, that this is worthy of the planning department spending another couple of weeks, because we would not be able to take this up until the 23rd. Unless we can meet jointly with finance, which we probably can't because you have budget meetings, I was going to give the night off to zoning and planning just as a little reward.
No pressure. Incentivized.
No, you all have worked very hard. So I guess I'd like the sense from the committee whether we want to ask the planning department, because that really is kind of the piece, the one piece that's kind of, for me, as the chair, kind of out there, and whether that is a big enough. And what I don't want to do is to get to the floor of the board if we come out of this saying that, this is fine. Somebody stand up from this committee, and someone else may, and we can't control the other 16 people on the board that, and I'm not putting any restrictions on any of the other aldermen here, but I can tell you, without even looking at him, if we start getting into a debate on the percentage, it'll come back to this committee. Right? So we're on the same page on that. Right, exactly. Because, again, we don't know. So if we're not comfortable with the 10%, then I think we need to hold it and let the department do its analysis. If we're comfortable with 10%, then we, as a committee, need to go out strongly advocating and telling our colleagues why this and that to make these changes, because I would, I'd take it back and we'll go back to that. So Alderman Baker, then Swister.
Yeah. It's not an issue for me in a sense, so if it's a case of 10% or wait, I would certainly go ahead with 10% now. The question, though, I have is a procedural one. There are some technical clarifications and fixes to the draft that are likely still to be needed before we could vote on it. And the question is whether that's going to, if we were going to take time to do that, then I would ask for the planning department to at least reflect on this question if we were going to take the time. If we're going to try and vote this tonight without those clarifications or corrections, then obviously it doesn't make sense to hold the matter up just for that question. It's just
I would ask you, Alderman, because I had hoped that by this going out early last week, that we would get some of those technicalities taken care of, because if those technicalities are going to derail something, and I'm certainly, again, not going to do that on the floor of the board, then we will hold it. I'm just,
well,
you know,
it's not going to derail for me. It's just that we try and send things out with a clean document.
Right. Well, but I'm saying we can do that if the technicalities are small enough that they're not changing the intent or the content of this, as we've done with many things, clean up what everybody sees.
That's fine.
But if it's going to change something in content-wise, then we hold it.
No, I understand. Yeah. My concern is just whether you wanted to deal with the questions. We've got several issues of phrasing and in the draft that we've raised tonight that need to be clarified. All the liaisons are on by several. And if they can be done as a sense of the committee and then it's going to come out before, I just didn't know if you wanted to take something out before we...
Well, I would leave that to Candace and to Lita around kind of wording. I think Lita's still here. Yeah, you're kind of behind all of the kids, so I can't... So, no offense, I
yeah.
Off the air.
I got a big head. Okay, that's all right.
No, but she's shorter than you are, so.
Oh, that's fine.
Based on what we came to, what you've heard from all the meetings and whatever around the, tweaking of wording.
I think in terms of the most serious one, I've heard that from Alderman Yates on the I&I, that the solution to that is to get Craig Russell in contact with all the members to get sorted out, because the other members of the committee be concerned about that, take Alderman Baker's issue in terms of the legal needs on the easement, to get sorted out without an issue. I think the other big one was the recommendation from the planning department, from the planning board, in terms of the open space and whether there was an interest in doing some flexibility.
Well, we haven't got that.
Well, there's one other one I had, which was the conceptual review, matching the conceptual review.
Yeah. Again, it's a question of looking at those criteria to see if there's anything, but I don't see that to be a major...
But somebody has to do it.
Right. No. So I haven't heard yet anything that I can suggest that substantively is going to be an issue.
Okay,
thank you. Alderman Hesperian,
I don't know if this solves the problem with Alderman Yates' problem, but on 21, under paragraph 2, subparagraph F, if instead of the word enhancement, if we use the word improvement, does that float your boat? Or is that
good question on that. I think the other problem with that whole section is that it says proposed development offers long-term benefits to the city and nearby areas, such as. That says to me that you might get all of these and you might not. That would be good, but not limited to. That's better. I would say that from... planning board's thing, that I think their next to last recommendation about changing the definition of enhanced open space to available for public use for the word public accessible makes sense. And if they say they can make explicit the things that I don't see explicit, then I guess that's fine.
So I'll move with the sheet.
Pardon?
No, not.
Okay.
I'm just amusing Lyle Baker.
No. He's just.
Okay, so on.
Where did Mr. Zuckerman go from just sitting next to you?
I drove him away.
Did you really?
All right, enough. So, all right, so it sounds like 10% is kind of where we're headed right now. That. Correct? Unless we end up going back. All right. Then there's for the open space, which is on page 3 of the Planning and Development Board's recommendation, percentage of beneficial open space would be specified within a range or left as is, but it is provided that a deviation from the current minimum of 15% is allowable, and if only the land use committee, but again, so we know that that's not. So I guess from my perspective, we're saying the 15% is a minimum. So, Joyce, I'm not sure what you're asking us, what you're suggesting here.
That you might, in fact, deviate and come up with less than 15%, but you would have to have a demonstrable community benefit to for that to be passed, whether it's, if it's not the land use committee, it's the board, but it would have to be, it couldn't be by a simple majority.
Well, it can't be, anyway.
Pardon?
Any special permit has to have the two-thirds.
Oh, I thought it was going to be the cucaracha.
No, I mean, any special permit has to pass by a majority, not more than two-thirds vote, so that's...
But there's nothing in the zoning, as it's written, at least that I saw, that allowed you to go less than that 15%. No. But I could think of benefits that may not be 15%, but they may be juicier than, you know, a 15% grass.
Okay, so that's what you're talking about. 15, well, yeah, well, I'm not going to go there with the grass. Okay. Plus we legalize medical marijuana here.
Good night.
having said that, Alderman, I think I'm going to defer this, or focus this question on Alderman Kalis and Alderman Baker, who were and pretty staunch supporters of increasing the open space. So is there appetite for giving an option to reduce the beneficial open space?
I'm not eager to do that myself, but that's...
Yeah.
Can I just say one thing?
No, not at the moment. Okay. Okay. I have a question. Yeah? Does available open space include top of building open space?
Yeah,
yeah,
we saw that.
Mm-hmm. Article. Okay. Yes,
all in the Gentile? Well, with all due respect to Joyce, she certainly entitled to her opinion. I haven't heard one person advocating for less open space. Everybody that offered from whether it's a member of the board or any other group or member of the public has been advocating for as much open space as possible. So I would hope that there is no way that we would allow any developer to come in with less than 15%. The current plan, actually, that you've seen before, has 20% open space, and that's going to be the minimum with what's going to end up happening.
Okay, yes, Alderman Danberg.
The other comment that I make on that is that I think that just as important as the percentage of open space is the encouragement or requirement, I don't know which it would be, that the space be, that there be at least one space that's large enough for people to enjoy and use, as opposed to having a lot of open space that amounts to 20% that includes pathways to and from a garage, between narrow spaces between a building. I think that we discussed in the Chesapeake Hill special permit the ideas that it should open space include the treed areas within a parking lot that have trees and grass and flowers on them, or are we able to make a request that at least a portion of this open space be someplace where there can actually be a little open square where there can be benches and people can enjoy coming out and sitting in the sun and chatting. That's what's important to me in open space and what I think of it.
Alvin Danberg, would you like to look at page 21, number 5?
Recreation opportunities. Meaningful.
Definition of beneficial.
Yeah.
And also on page 22 in section J.
It's a good point, but it's exactly the kind of thing that is fair game when you get into the special permit. And the developer knows that, you know, that those kinds of things are going to come up and there's going to be, you know, a significant amount of discussion around something just like that, Vicki. So
if they give a percentage, they can work out the
And then land use will have the opportunity to try and help shape that, to make a better project. That's all to be a game.
And I just don't think, Alderman Danberg, that we're going to put that level of detail in the law.
Yeah, I'm good with that, I think.
Okay.
And I would say at the higher number of the higher percentage of open space.
Yes, Joyce?
I hear the board, and I understand that this is not going to carry the day, but I do want to just say that what motivated it was not what benefit you got, but there was a lot of comment about the elevation of this development. And so it was a question of if you could lower the elevations, you would have to enlarge building footprints. And that was really, you needed some flexibility in land in order to do that. So it was sort of that kind of trade-off where this idea came from me and the planning board, not just me.
Thank you. All right. Are there any other comments, questions, concerns? Yes, Alderman Taylor.
I know that you want to close this.
We don't have to.
I want to reopen the flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be sure that we're all clear, because to me, it's one of those things that gives us the opportunity to really make this multi-use project work. And it's not saying that, I mean, in no way am I saying I want more traffic or I want more density, but that 20% or 25%, whatever that might be, in retail, that flexibility to have that, not necessarily that, and when I said I think we'll land on 10%, that's probably where, you know, once land use, it goes into land use, we end up there. I'm just saying, we're only talking about the retail portion. It allows land use to have that extra flexibility they might need. And we are governed by the impacts that are outlined throughout the whole document. And to me, that's what makes it more palatable than anything else, is that we're governed by those.
Okay, Alderman Caleb, I have to ask you.
Yes.
All right. Are you comfortable sitting here tonight of picking 20 or 25%?
No.
Okay. So the then question becomes, is it worth the investment of the Planning and Development Department to spend another amount of time to look into this? And to your point of that, we'll probably, based on what we're hearing from the alderman from the ward, that it will settle at 10. Based on what we're hearing from the chair of land use, is it really, with all the stuff on our docket, and I urge you to look at what we have,
the 6-week delay.
So,
my question, though, is to the development group, is that I don't know that there's a lot of work that actually goes in, because if we're governed by the same caps and the same traffic studies, is there work that goes into this?
Well, I mean, I would ask really the committee to ask what kinds of things they'd like for us to look at. I mean, we probably instinctively looked at the types of uses that would be likely and the potential increase in traffic, and have to also look, and you and I talked about this before, about this, when you get to a certain level and you have a variety of mixed uses, that you hit a point at which your traffic action may not go up. So we have to find out where that point is, because a shared traffic and parking analysis is different than looking at all these individual pieces in isolation. So, I mean, we can give it as much energy as you'd like to see in terms of decision making, but I think
not if you really wanted to go through it and the kind of questions you would ask. That's fine. That's just the will of the committee. Alderman Yates and Swiston?
I just think it would be pure speculation. There's no way to tell this. I think the fact that somebody who wants to put actual money down for the site doesn't feel that they need the flexibility further than this, and reemphasizing that you do have the accessory uses to the retail and the office, which could be fairly substantial. And if those are open to anybody who wants to come to the site, I think you've got more than enough there to come up with it. That looking at the totality of, say, that Wobbin block, I mean, a big chunk of that Wobbin block would be incorporated, I think, into the accessory uses in the retail and the office. So you're only
the 20,000 will be adding things that aren't necessarily put in as accessory uses. And to guess between the percentages is pure speculation.
Yeah, my sentiment is very similar to Alderman Yates, is that especially if we're saying that it looks like all roads are going to still be pointing down to 10%, is it worth the delay in this committee? As you were saying, if we don't vote on this today, then our opportunity to be looking at it again is weeks down the line, and you would take this up again in 2 weeks?
Yeah. You won't have a night off?
Well, I'm not looking for a night off, but I'm just well,
incentivized.
He's playing at the Red Sox, I'm not.
Right.
I don't know.
No,
oh,
no. I'm not looking for the time off. I feel like the possibility of what's gained doesn't seem
to
be worth
the question.
Yeah.
Alderman Gentile, then Baker.
Well, I want to respond directly to Dave, and I guess what I would say is I would go back to a comment that the chair made a little while ago, which was, you know, I believe you were saying you didn't envision it. So there was a time when you would have thought it hard to believe that you could.
I think I used the word impossible, but that's okay.
And, you know, the reason that that's happened is that there's been a lot of give and take. And, this is a much different document than what we originally documented, but it's probably a better document, so you know, I'm fine with it. But I'm asking that we stick with the 10%. There are some real reasons why that is important. You're really only talking like 20,000 versus 24,000. So I would hope that 2,000 square feet isn't all that huge a thing, you know, to not support what is a very, very involved document in many other ways. So it's taken a lot of work to get here, but it's kind of important that we keep it at 10.
Okay, Alderman Baker.
Well, I just want to say I understand Alderman Kalis's concern, and I share it. At the same time, the idea behind this is that the whole project becomes successful, because we obviously don't want something that's not going to work here. And at some point, the time cost is significant in and of itself. So I'm on reflection, persuaded that I'm ready to go with the 10 and get it done.
Okay.
Yeah, just real quickly, I think we're as close to the Pareto optimality as you're going to get. That's where you can't change position without making somebody worse off. Alderman Gentile nailed it. Yeah. So.
Okay. Alderman Kalis, you all set? Mm-hmm. Are we ready to take the written vote? Everybody all set? So you're going to just abstain.
We're going to have the technical stuff's going to be done. Okay.
I'm going to abstain pending receipt of those technical corrections. All right. But other than that, I came tonight prepared to vote for this.
Okay, and so write that down. Okay. So all those in favor, as written in the Planning Department memo dated April 6th. Alderman Kalis.
With subject to the technical.
Subject to the technical.
All right.
Alderman Kalis, Yates, Swiston, Baker, Johnson, Danberg, and Lennon. All opposed, all abstentions. Alderman Sangiolo. And that's your working with you. So you'll have that worked out by Monday night, right? Okay. All right. On docket item 400-11, Parens 2.
Get a 4.
Move in again.
Everybody fine with that? Okay. So there's a motion to move NAN. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor? That's everybody. Yay. Motion to adjourn. Motion. Yay. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Yep.
Is it a 268A problem for you because you're in a butter?
I am in a butter, but I don't directly butt what we're rezoning.
I know, and it's a rezoning, and it's not a special permit. That's why.
I told them I understand the special permit, I understand the actual rezoning, but we're creating extra.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what I can tell.